don't talk about this too much nationally, but I've been talking more about it because isn't it just unfortunate that more and more of these things happen almost every day or week? And I get called and asked for advice and from presidents or people who head organizations, and my advice is that whether you like it or not, you are going to be the spokesperson for what your community is feeling. So I felt that my role was to express to the world what we were feeling, what the students were feeling about this horrible event at NIU. And I dealt with it. And, you know, the pain is still there for all of us who are here, but every year we learn to deal with it a little bit more.
There is that scar. There's a scar that, unfortunately, like you said, gets torn open every month or two, it seems like, with, you know, every one of these shootings or murders in public places. And what does NIU's experience have to offer whomever the latest victims are?
Well, I wish there was some magic formula or set of five things you could do. I think the message is that life does go on eventually, but you do have to pause to honor those who fell, who were injured. You do have to listen very, very carefully to the needs and fulfill the needs of people when you go through it. Take care of their needs. It's old-fashioned, but I think these large organizations that have become pretty impersonal, you have to treat it as a family matter. This was a very personal matter. Someone came into our house and did violence, and did violence to members of our family, so you have to be familiar in the way you approach it. Try and do the right thing, knowing that you can't ever make this go away and that people will criticize how you do some things, but you know, do the best you can. Try to do the right thing and take care of people. And eventually, you will all come together and move on.
How did being here for the fifth anniversary play into your decision to move on this year as president of NIU?
I'll tell you something, and I'll tell your audience something because it's local. I fully intended for 2008 to be my last year because everyone knows I believe that presidencies are finite and that you come in, you do what you can, you do the best you can, but they don't need to be lifetime jobs, you know. And I thought 8 years was a good number that you accomplish what you can. 2008 came, and I couldn't leave. Personally, I couldn't leave. I was too committed. And for whatever reason, you know, you need some stability during a crisis like this. And that starts at the top. And so I, in my mind, said, I really need to see this thing through until I was comfortable that we had achieved those things we had talked about. You know, we weren't going to let this thing define us. And we were going to heal. And we're in a position now where it's 5 years later. We'll never be completely healed. There is scar tissue. I like the way you put that. But we're moving forward. And so it was, yes, absolutely, it was a key ingredient to my decision that now it was time for me to step aside and hope we get a great new leader, president, who can take this thing to this NIU, this Northern, to greater heights.
What's left unanswered for you from that day?
Well, the only thing that's left unanswered, and we did a Herculean job of trying to answer the question, why would someone do this? And we tried as best we could. And the answers are not completely satisfying. And they're highly speculative. As they are in these cases, as we try to figure out each new episode, what was in the minds of these individuals to do the Sandy Hook? What was in the mind of this? We will never know. This is very frustrating for rational people who have educated people. We want to know why. And that remains the unanswered question. I've kind of learned to live with it, and I think about it, and I pick it up every now and then. I read what I can about individuals who are so troubled, and I try and figure out how we can prevent it and how we can get people like that with help. But that's the major question that, for me, is not completely answered.
I don't want to have to ask this question every year, but what can society do to make this stop?
The one thing that Sandy Hook did, and I think it took the just the horrific thought that young, innocent people, of a tender age, were so brutally harmed, has focused attention on how can we prevent this violence? What are the root causes of it? And I know that it always goes to certain things. You know, it's pretty predictable. Is it gun control? Is it too many guns? But it's much more complex than that, isn't it? It really is a societal issue. I mean, I suppose those, our historians, our cultural historians, would argue that, well, historically, we've settled a lot of our disputes in violent ways. Historically, I mean, a lot of societies do that. It's in the culture a little bit. Add to that the complexities of a modern world. Add to that some of the economic issues that we face. Add to that that we as a society have not grappled with how you deal with mental illness. And when do you identify it? How do you intervene? What therapies are available to people? And then I suppose, the culture of how you settle disputes. And some people will talk about violent video games, and people will talk about too many guns. I think the answer is all of those things. But I think we need a good national conversation on the nature of violence in our society. That's a long-term thing. I don't know if we'll ever get there. But, you know, there are hundreds and millions of guns available. There are many young people that go untreated for their mental issues. We have far too many people solving their problems with violence, domestic violence. It's ubiquitous in the papers. And it's getting so that, our episode was in the newspaper for a long period of time. Now episodes like that are two-day stories.
Pulling from your experiences as president here and also maybe as a political science professor, what's the government's responsibility here?
Well, I think the government is responsible for setting the tone for reasonable regulations, for provision for health care, for mental health care, for a reasonable regulation. I believe in the Second Amendment, but for regulation of who can have guns, of education in the schools, of privacy laws that both protect privacy and at the same time protect society. When do you have to report that you have an individual who may be a threat? And who do you have to report that to? And we all work on security. I mean, there are more companies that have every day I get three or four emails with companies that have text alert systems or security systems. Well, that's an answer of a sort, but you're always one or two episodes behind in this. Now the issue turns to should we have guards in public schools? Well, maybe, maybe not. But That is a role for government to have these discussions. It's complicated because, you know, of our federal system where you have, you know, local people who see one thing and state people who see another and then federal law. That's why I'm glad that we're finally having a national debate. And I do hope that President Obama, in his State of the Union address that's coming up as we tape this this interview, I hope that he takes the broader view of this, as I just attempted to do, and not just focus on one or two things, because I think that's what it's going to take.
How are you going to observe the 6th?
Well, I'll probably come back and melt in the crowd and observe it from the gallery rather than the stage. And, of course, I don't, you know, being president, one of the wonderful things about being president, you can pretty much decide how these things are going to be and what, within reason. So, you know, the new president has a bit of a challenge to understand the depth of feeling on this issue and then figure out what sort of traditions are best. You know, these traditions can change. Over time, they do change. And so we'll have to wait and see.